This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back with the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and joining us as they do every Thursday in this hour. Good morning, right back to you, Antoine Johnson. Go blue, right back to you, Justin. Just who am I talking to? I'm talking to the people watching us on the stream. This is when we do the MGO blog roundtable here on the show. Joining us as they do first is Mr. MGO blog himself, Brian Cook, BC. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. MGO blog number two, Seth Fisher. How are you?
I'm all right.
And all right, only all right.
Well, I'll be fine as soon as I get some sleep. I got UFR done about 3 a.m. last night.
Oh, that's a massive undertaking. There's no question.
Brian is sitting there like, oh, yes, I remember this.
It is a sleepless existence. And you are going over the film as intensively as that, Seth. And then, of course, the man who just discovered some new technology, or at least new to him.
New to me.
He has a headset with a microphone, people. How about that for Mr. Craig Ross? Let's clap it up for Craig. Good job, Craig. How are you?
Yeah, thanks, guys. You know, I also, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but my wife bought a cell phone for me this week.
I sent him a text message.
What? I know.
What? And he was like,
unbelievable. Craig, in 1 week, got a headset with a microphone and a cell phone, too?
Yeah, I'm still not really sure how to use the cell phone, but I had to have it to get into hockey last weekend. So.
Does your car now have a CD player in it?
It has. I have a new car because my other one, as you know, broke down in Adrian, Michigan.
New one has an 8-track, Sam. His new one has an 8-track.
Yeah, 8-track.
And I don't think you can. Can you buy a car now, a new car with a CD player in it? I don't even know if you can.
Yeah, I was surprised. I didn't think I could. I was disappointed, but it does have it. It does have a CD player in it. So all good. The world is good.
Well, fellas, we are talking to people from Shanghai to Singapore to Georgia. They're listening from all over the world to hear what you guys have to say, to hear what you're thinking coming out of that game against Washington. Are you of the mind that, hey, Washington isn't, or excuse me, Wisconsin.
Wrong UW. Yeah.
Isn't the team we thought they would be. So not really as celebratory a mood as you would have otherwise been had they been as good as we thought they would have been preseason. Or are you saying, hey, this was a real sign of progress and growth for Michigan in this game, starting with you, Brian Cook?
I mean, a little both, right? Like, they lost their starting quarterback halfway through. But one of the reasons they lost their starting quarterback is Dax Hill annihilated the guy. And we saw Aiden Hutchinson be the kind of ruthless destroyer that we wanted from him preseason. So every time he does that, that's a notch on the belt. We saw Ojabo take a step forward. There are real reasons to take something from this game. But at the same time, this is not a Wisconsin team like it's been the last few years, right? They couldn't run the ball against a couple of opponents they had earlier in the year. In an alarming fashion. And then Mertz is just all over the place. So I don't necessarily think that this team is the team that was favored by 10 over Michigan in the preseason, but to go in there and Fetty Wap them is pretty good.
Fetty Wap?
I don't know what it means either, but that's what the kids are saying.
Fetty Wap? I have no idea what that means.
I figured if all people, Craig would know what that one was.
Yeah. It sounds very old.
Like, oh, yes, I remember the Fetty Wapping of 1694. It was
he's a rapper, and for some reason, 17 to 38 is Fetty Wapping. I don't know why.
Okay.
I just know the internet knows that.
That's terrible, personally, but that's just my opinion. But carry on. I at least knew who that was, though. A lot of the music references you guys make, I'm like, I'm kind of lost. This one, I actually know.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, the left tackle especially. I mean, when's the last time Wisconsin had a left tackle that could just, you know, be abused so bad? And unfortunately, Alex Drain is really good at scouting opponents, so he kind of looked and saw that their left tackle is pretty weak, especially in pass protection. So we knew going in that, like, that was kind of going to happen, and then we can't be as excited about, oh, my God, we are just destroying this guy.
Yeah, because Ojabo just ran around him for basically all of his sacks, and I'm like, that's not supposed to happen. That's bad.
So, I was just going to say, like, the problem is if Michigan beats you, then you are by definition not good because we can't possibly acknowledge that Michigan's any good. So, like, you know, if Wisconsin was 2-2, then they might be a pretty good team and they had a tough schedule. But now that they're 1-3, you know, it doesn't count as much. Just like Washington, they lost to Michigan. NIU, they lost to Michigan. Western Michigan, they lost to Michigan.
Well, listen, I think Wisconsin's defense is legit. Their run defense is bullish. You know, watching them up front, I mean, I think Michigan has some pro players on their offensive line, and there are some matchups that they just flat won. I mean, I got a lot of respect, and no matter where you ran, they had a guy. I mean, their linebackers and their defensive linemen were winning at the line of scrimmage often. They tried to get outside a couple of times, couldn't really do that. Had to make a couple adjustments just to get some breathing room in the run game to keep them honest. But this was always going to be a game, fellas, for Michigan anyway, that rose and fell on their ability to throw the football, to get some chunk plays, some big plays like Penn State was able to do. And that was, to me, the story of the game on offense for Michigan. They were able to get a couple of those plays.
Well, you know, Seth is correct. I mean, Wisconsin didn't give up any yards, run yards, to Notre Dame, who's not an incompetent team. You know, they gave up 3 yards to Notre Dame on the ground. Penn State couldn't really run it against them. Wisconsin's given up prior to Michigan, I think the number was 65 yards on the ground all year. Now that may be sack adjusted, but it's still nothing. And so Michigan was able to run the ball better than anyone else has this year against them, even with some strange things, I think, that Michigan did with split zone, or maybe not such good things.
One of the counters off of split zone. But
I actually thought that was a pretty nifty adjustment, because that four-eye guy was – he was – that dude's a pro.
It's also a Sanborn and Chenal. I mean, those guys are really, really good. So I think it's a mistake to underrate Michigan's win here. I will say one of the curious things on the week, at least from sort of a internet/media thing, was that last week I paid no attention to my notes and picked Wisconsin to win. And Brian actually picked Michigan to win this game, and then people posted on his board that, oh, bad Brian Cook, he's such a downer, he's such you know, he's such a negative person, and he had picked Michigan to win. I had picked him to lose. You know, so
Seth picked him to get shut out.
Well, and that's because I was watching that defense, and like, what does Michigan like to do? They like to run off their tight ends, right? They like to bring the tackle down. They like to get their tight ends to make the key blocks against linebackers, and then ideally bring someone around from the backside to kick an edge. Well, they could not get any blocks with their tight ends to work, and that was just because, and that was not like them not being in the right spot. They'd get to the right spot with the same power they always get there, and then Schoonmaker would just be run through by one of these linebackers. So, like, Wisconsin is a legit team. I think that Sanborn in particular is an All-American, and it wasn't like we're Rutgers. We're like, okay, I'm mad that we're not taking advantage of them doing something that's not going to work if you can punish them. Wisconsin was in their base defense and doing this by winning those matchups. You're absolutely right, Sam. And especially Sanborn was winning those matchups, and that's kind of what they're going to do.
Well, and there's I think there's one exception to that.
Yeah.
And that is running split zone and short yardage.
Yes.
Because Michigan was doubling their nose, and then you're asking your left tackle to deal with someone who's lined up inside of him and slanting away from him. which never works.
Right.
I did this for 17 years. I never saw that work. And so, you know, I miss Ben Mason because, you know, when Ben Mason was out, you just ran ISO and you got it.
Mm-hmm. What they do with that, though, because the first time they tried it, I talked about this with Jack Miller. The first time they tried to do that was on the fourth down. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was great with this because you got the guy lined up to your inside. And he said, but his first step was with his outside leg. So if you can imagine, as we're talking about this, imagine you're in a stance and the guy is on your inside shoulder, but you step with your outside leg. You're giving them your inside.
Well, what I'm saying is I've seen people try to make that block over and over and over again, and they never do.
But they never do. They only did that one more time, and it happened to be in the red zone. And that time, that guy just beat him. He just beat Ryan Hayes on that play, and they didn't try it again.
Well,
and they did. They started doing what
Craig I think there's a lot to be said for a lead blocker on short yardage. You know, I feel like when Michigan was running out Khalid Hill and Ben Mason, things went better than they did yesterday. Not yesterday, Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing when Gattis was coming here with hashtag speed and space that I was like, please just keep a fullback. Just have a fullback and you'll be fine on these. And, like, it's really showing. And it showed when Wisconsin did it because they got in fourth and one. And they're like, okay, we're just going to hand it to our 280-pound running back. And he's going to either run a dive, in which case, like, you know, you can hit that guy at the line of scrimmage and he's still going to power through. Or he's going to be blocking the main guy. And it's just, there's no way to stop that. Every single, you know, and we've been having trouble in these goal line situations because of it. And, like, the split zone game itself is just getting a little tired for Michigan because they run it so much. And I know why. They love to run off the tight end. They love to run off the tackle. And they love to kick out with Eric Gall because he's really good at it. The problem is teams have adjusted and they're now cheating to that.
Right. And they're not really running the what Sam calls bluff anymore.
Right.
Right.
What you call arc zone, right?
Well, I call arc zone, yeah. So that was a major way to make that functional is because you can't get too aggressive because if that tight end passes you up, you're in trouble. And Michigan has not done that. And I think that's why we saw JJ McCarthy in the second half because he's a guy who's much more able to pull it and might be able to open up the ground game a little bit more at points, you know?
Well, I mean, this leads to a question for you guys is if your quarterback isn't really going to run read options, is there any point to being in a spread split? I mean, a spread offense at all? Might not make more sense to go back to 1939 and have the quarterback under the center and have the running backs have the advantage of a little bit of momentum by the time they get to the line of scrimmage?
Well, I mean, Michigan is running RPOs, right? They aren't, mesh points aren't dead all the time. So there is something there where there's a reason to do it. And also even before read stuff started becoming popular, like people just operated from the gun because it was a more efficient way to do things.
Also, Craig, you're not on Twitter, but I took this game, I put it in sepia tone, and I stuck it on there and said, who is running? Who can someone identify this game? Because it's a single wing team against a 5-3 team, so it's got to be from the 50s. I mean, literally, you could take a screen cap of this game and say it looks exactly like a 1950s game or a 1940s game, because Michigan is basically in the single wing. If you call the quarterback a fullback, that's what it is.
So three things to answer all of Brian's point, because I've been saying since Western Michigan, you got to sprinkle J.J. McCarthy in the game in meaningful moments. And they started doing that in this game, and I think we're going to see that with increasing frequency in the games to come. That's not any inside information, but you have to be blind not to see how he can be a complementary piece, at least for them in that capacity. But they made some adjustments in the run game that were modestly successful. I just don't think you're going to run the football on this team. They did start having a lead blocker on their split zone. Instead of kicking out that edge guy, they would kick out that four-eye with the motion man and lead up in with a fullback / H-back guy. That had some success. They wedge block for a little bit. That had some success. But to me, you weren't going to run the football on this team. Could you throw the football down the field? They got it a couple of times, But what sticks out to me, and I'm curious what you guys think about this. I just felt like it at halftime, man, Michigan should be up like three touchdowns. Because there were a couple of touchdowns left on the field, three touchdowns left on the field for that matter. So seeing Michigan win that game 38-17 with three touchdowns left on the field, I feel like, man, you know, they have some real upside if they can just start capitalizing on the opportunities that are there.
So Michigan did capitalize on their opportunities. And that was one of the things about the offense is that they had a couple of shots where they actually did, you know, there were a lot of high leverage situations where Michigan actually got something. But you're right. Like once they got the ball at the 5 yard line, they couldn't score. And the defense was wrecking them. I mean, we barely talked about like the start, but the first four drives, there was not a single positive play. I did that. I do that EPA thing, like the expected points added. The most positive play Wisconsin had in their first four drives was when they took the delay of game. And the response they got from that was, I'm not going to do it on air for you, but you know, it was the lady giving the bird. and that was a hand blasting. And when you have that kind of defensive start, that often leads to like a 28-0 beginning, right? But like they did miss that fourth down opportunity. That was a big swing. And then they missed the opportunity to score twice after turnovers in Wisconsin's territory, or at least opportunities to get touchdowns in those circumstances. And so that set them back, and it was like nothing for a long time when the defense was just wrecking them. And, yeah, I mean, I have to go back and credit Wisconsin. Like, if they're facing not the third or second best defense in the entire country, they probably would have been up 28-0 after the first quarter.
Speaking, you know, of a play that I'd like to bring up is it was 0-0 early and we're pinned back and there's the little pass on third down out to Blake Corum, and he has no right making a first down on that play. And I don't think it's Sanborn. I think it's Chenault? I think it's Chenault and another linebacker.
Yeah. And
he's 3 or 4 yards short, and he just blasts through the guy. He just knocks the guy backwards, gains 4 yards. Michigan get the first down. When I saw that, I thought, okay, I hate to put Corum in the same breath at this point with Mike Hart, but that was a Mike Hart play. I mean, and it really was a key play in the game. So as opposed to being bottled back, punting deep in our own territory on a fourth down, they had a first down. And that was 100% Corum's ability. And it was something that was, I felt, one of the remarkable plays in the game to me.
That was a key sequence because Michigan ended up punting from their 17 to get a 3-and-out. And then A.J. Henning's able to take the next punt back several yards, and they win 23 yards on that exchange of punts. And then they go down. They're in a position to go for it on fourth down again. They go for it, and then the flea flicker immediately follows, and Michigan's up 7-0. So this was going to be a field position game, and that was, I think, the biggest win in that department.
Yeah. Can I point out, too, in that play, McNamara was about to get sacked. They had a safety delivered right to him. And he got out of that, and that was one of, I think, four times that he was facing an unblocked guy in the backfield and scrambled out of there. So, I mean, he's not fast. In fact, we saw there was one play where he got out of the pocket, and then, like, there's, like, 5 yards to go, and you're like, okay, quarterback's going to get that. Every quarterback gets that. And then he did not get it. He got run down by the safety a yard or two short. So McNamara is not fast, and that goes into why they don't run zone reads well with him. But man, like the ability to escape the pocket is not necessarily speed, and he's got that, and that's a big thing in this game. He did not take any sacks. He did not turn the ball over. When he missed, it was like it didn't really go near anybody, or it wasn't like a pass that was going to get intercepted. So like this was a game too where, you know, this things could change on a dime on you if you turn it over, and Michigan did not turn it over. Until like
so,
Bowman.
When I talked about the missed opportunity, I wasn't necessarily referring to them not being able to punch it in like you expected them to in the red zone after the turnover. I'm talking about the shots in the passing game,
the wheel route,
the wheel route. One of them on the very first play of the game, and we talked about this. We were able to get a steal from the coach's copy, at least Devin was. And this was one that he talked about. I'm putting it up on the screen right now. Can you guys see that?
Yeah, Sandristel.
So this guy right here, Mikey Sandristel, he went here, which was open, but this is a touchdown. Very first play.
Well, I mean, and I think Devin pointed out that the pass to Sandristel in this is a much easier pass because he can leave the ball out where Sandristel can run it down.
Well, but do we know if he's reading low to high or high to low? Because, it's possible that it's just like, okay, this is my progression and this guy's open.
I was definitely have confirmed that Mikey Sandristel was
okay.
There's no question about that. But again, I'm not harping on that as a glass half empty view as much as I am saying they beat that team 17, and they left that on the field. But this is an example of what's possible, where they could go if and when he starts seeing. So this is the wheel, and so the wheel he was able to wheel. Look here with that's Roman Wilson on the post. And so Devin was saying, if you're late on the wheel, hit the dig. But in this instance, if you're late on the wheel, hit the post. That's a touchdown.
The wheel was a touchdown. I mean, look where the safety is. He was getting him. So the wheel was a touch. So the wheel was at the very least a first down if you just zing it in there, right? And you're right. If you're late on it, there's another option. But the other option was just to lay it out there, because there's no way that safety is going to get to him. The only place that safety could have made that play was where he put it.
Right. And then this is the last one. This was the four verts. This is what we couldn't see. This is what we couldn't see. You know, the pass that went right down the middle to Roman.
Yeah, it was short.
The safety was, they had gone 12 personnel here, so they're thinking run. They go one high. And so Michigan, anticipating that, calls for verts. Mm-hmm. And Roman is challenging, threatening this hash, and the safety is responding. This is the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Eric All down the seam. So, again, these are plays that are there that you got to believe they're going to start hitting. They're going to start hitting those plays. If and when they do... Man, now we're really talking about something.
Do you think maybe the problem is that Fox is broadcasting the games to the players too? Because, like, if you're watching the game on TV and Fox is broadcasting from Badger Stadium, you're not seeing any of this. They would not show any of the passing game. Like, and then they didn't have reviews either. I was, like, trying to break down the film on this thing, and people are like, well, you're not giving Craig credit for some of the looks that were down there, and like you're just showing the Devin stuff now too. And I'm like, that's the first time I'm seeing it. I watched this from Michigan.
So those things were, you know, Devin had the first one, but you're right, we don't get a chance to see all of that. Those were actually from Borges's coach's copy.
Okay,
so he's able to see that eye, and this guy's like, man, you realize that, you know, the deep shots that they took and hit were just a fraction of the deep shots that were there.
Well, that's been Cade McNamara's best attribute so far, right? Like, there was one where I think Johnson broke stride that hit the ground, and that would have been another long touchdown if he hadn't broken that, I think in the Washington game, something like that. But almost every other deep ball has been on point. Like, the double move to Johnson before the end of the first half on the 2-minute drill that wasn't, because it was an 87-yard touchdown. And like, it's frustrating early in this game because he's throwing behind receivers. He's a little late some places. But the one thing that he has just been able to do very consistently is hit people deep. So if he gets the green light to unleash the dragon some more, yeah, you got some opportunities there.
Yeah, it's easy to forget he's only in his sixth start, right? I mean, it's his show. We've heard that the pressure is different when you're the guy. He hit it was a great ball on the flea flicker. He was able to get the stutter and go off while getting hit. So there were some signs of growth in this game that makes you feel like some of those plays that were left are going to be realized. And then you started growing up JJ McCarthy at the same time to give you some of what he can't give you. Like, he can't give you to one of you guys is like, he broke open on the run and you just realize, okay, that's not his.
I mean, we could talk about that, the arc reads and like quarterback runs, stuff like that. Like, there's a difference between just using it as a threat when the defense is completely selling out to come inside, which anyone can run. You could put me out there and I could get yards if the guy is going to sell out that much and you're running the play to beat him.
No.
Well, you ever
see someone else? Craig. Craig's pretty spry.
You know what, Mike? My kids started running away from me at the zoo in the direction of the cars. And every parent there is still talking about, oh my God, Seth can move. So I got a little bit of game going straight forward. I can get going. Any quarterback it was out there should be able to get some yards to keep that part of it at least functional. I just don't think, and I keep going back and forth, are they doing it pre-snap? Are the coaches telling him to do pre-snap, or is he just not making reads? And there was at least one instance here where I knew that Cade had not made a read because Eric All was like pointing at the guy, hey, him, I can't do anything about this. And then he's not read, he hands it off, that guy tackles, Eric All stands up and he just like puts his arm in the air looking at Cade like, what the hell, man? So, like, I think that it's just McNamara likes to read before snap, and he's good at it. I think that he usually makes the right call and knows where he wants to go with the ball before the snap. And he's hard to game plan against because of that. If you're going to do something to mess with his reads, a lot of times he's going to smoke it out and then have an open guy. So he's an effective quarterback like that, and the ability to not turn it over and not get sacked and everything makes him not a bad quarterback. I think that his running and his reads are holding back the run game.
All right, so let's on the other side, let's talk about coming out of this game, how you're feeling about Michigan, because the defense, I mean, Mike McDonald had him, Aiden Hutchinson, who we didn't even mention. I guess we got to come back and talk about the great game that he had. But boy, you head on the road to a better than their record suggests Nebraska team. And you're feeling like, man, this is a Michigan team that is a threat. At least I do. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I want to get you guys' take on that. On the other side,
on my notes from last week, I did my yards per pass attempt formula, and it came out Michigan beating Wisconsin by 19. So why I would pick Wisconsin is I don't have any coherent idea. I also ignored, though, a note that I had, and I have no idea what it meant, was that Sam Webb is the Karl Marx of sports talk radio. And I have no idea what that meant or what the context of that was.
But you jotted it down.
I just jotted it down over something you had said. So better left unsaid.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how expansive the DJ package is starting this week. Because I feel like on a lot of, I won't say all of your third and fourth, fourth down is always going to be short and before the end of the game, but your third and fourth and shorts, I use him a great deal. I can't imagine that they're thinking differently on that. And that's not any inside information at all. That's just seeing what I saw a couple of weeks ago. And that is, man, this dude can help you right now.
That's true, but you know what? All you have to do is win two blocks, and Zinter and Stuber are going to win two blocks if you want to go forward. I mean, they have the guys up front to just make that a cheat. If they would just, I mean, every time they ran a dive, it was fine, right? There was no question. And you know, even when Haskins didn't quite hit the hole, on those duo plays, that split zone duo plays, if they weren't running split zone, if they weren't letting that guy slice underneath Hayes on the backside, I mean, the front side had owned. So, like, yeah. If you run behind that double, Stuber and Zinter are going to get it for you every single time. There's no one who's going to stop them. After they were plowing through Wisconsin's 300-pound guys, that's not – and they did it with Washington's guys, too. So,
Your point was good. Your point was good. Look, they that block on their end was a tough block to ask, and their tight ends just had a really rough day in this game. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you recruit a 6'6" guy, and you want him to block. Short yardage is never where he is going to excel. You know.
Yeah.
Because they just don't have the leverage.
Yeah. Coming back on the radio, guys. I'll count you in. Stand by.
So we want a fullback back, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think there's a good case for having one of your 85 guys being a fullback.
I don't want to.
All right, guys, coming back on radio. You ready to come back on radio? Stand by. Yep. Back on radio in 5, 4, 3.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Again, I don't want to get too far away from giving that Wisconsin defense credit. They are a good. There's a reason why no one before Michigan had rushed for over 50 yards against that defense. I think Penn State had 50 yards rushing against them. So they're freaking good. So could you do other things? Michigan did other things in that game. And their defense didn't allow that offense to from Wisconsin to get healthy on them. Aiden Hutchinson, for as much as we talk about David Ajabo coming out of that game, and rightfully so with his couple of sack effort and strip sack effort, they couldn't handle Aiden Hutchinson in that game, guys.
So if I was the official scorer in that game, I would be looking out the window waiting for Aiden Hutchinson to show up, because there's no way he didn't get at least half a sack in that game.
He just kept on. I mean, he kept on running guys into Ojabo. There was one where, like, he's in the backfield all by himself. He wraps the guy up. The guy kind of like spins away and spins right into Ojabo and Ojabo gets the sack. So
to me, that's half a sack. If you initiate a tackle process and someone else finishes it, that's half a sack.
Oh, he's gonna be Mr. Worldwide this week because of it, anyway. But the one thing that they stuck out in this game is Michigan ran a ton of that 5-1-5. They only had one linebacker out there and five defensive linemen. And then they were moving their defensive linemen out almost every single snap, because Wisconsin lets them do that. And this is not something they're going to be able to do against Nebraska, because Nebraska's going to keep your guys on the field. But what they were doing is saying, look, Wisconsin wants to be a gap team. We're going to have five guys for five offensive linemen, and you don't get to pick a gap. There isn't going to be any gap that doesn't have a lineman lined up right next to it, unless we're putting everybody on one side and Aiden Hutchinson on the other. And do you want to run at Aiden Hutchinson? You're welcome to do so. And he was they have him like just stopping that line the way that Don Brown used to have Peppers come up and make sure that one side of the line is just never ever going to have somebody break that side. And they have Dax Hill guarding the other side. And both those guys are keeping everything in the middle, where they've just got all these extra linemen. And they can play without a linebacker, because you don't need the linebackers like we were doing last year to go and get guys on the edge, because nothing can spill. And I think there was only one time anything even came close to spilling. It was because Hutchinson was getting held, and he still fell down and grabbed the guy's ankle and he went down. So, I mean, that guy is the reason why Michigan can play defense the way they're playing.
Yeah, it was a remarkable defensive effort by Michigan. Question, of course, is how good the Wisconsin offense is. I don't think their offensive line is close to what it's been in the past.
It's crazy.
First time I can remember, their running backs are not remarkable. They're pedestrian running backs, an unremarkable offensive line. Mertz occasionally looks like John Unitas, but most of the time looks like Rudy Bukic. It's not a great offensive team. That said, I think Wisconsin will or has a good chance to win the rest of their games. And it wouldn't stun me at all if they win out, regardless of who the quarterback is. But my guess is Mertz will be back this week.
Chase Wolf had one interception in 8 attempts, and that made his career interception rate go down a lot. So I think it's important for them to get Mertz back.
Well, I agree that Mertz is important, but I think he will be back. But I think they're going to win games. I don't think this is a team that's going to go in the tank. That defense is too good. Their linebackers are too talented. You know, one thing I'll say, and I really love this, we didn't mention it about Michigan, was they changed the sort of fabric of the offense by saying, hey, fourth down, we're still going for it. I love that. And I really loved the other big play in the game for me is the fourth and two when they Cade rolled left and threw the little out pass, which was free. This was a free first down and free yards, you know, on a fourth and one or two, which is always going to be there against every team in the universe. And so I was very happy to see Gattis and Harbaugh do that. Congrats to them. So there was lots about this game to like.
Yeah, I thought about Ross twice in this game when they announced John O'Neill's crew.
Oh, God.
Craig at that point. And then Harbaugh going for it on every fourth down. Craig must be sitting in on meetings over there.
They're not listening to me. I know that. And they shouldn't be. But I love that. Yeah, John O'Neill, actually, by O'Neill standards, this was a pretty good game because they essentially never made a call on anything.
I was so glad they did that. I'm going to write, this is in the UFR that goes out today. I was one of the main things that stuck out to me, like, how did we get competent officiating from the O'Neill crew? They've replaced one of the referees on that crew. One of the sidelines, the black woman is new, and they replaced the guy who made that horrible call that led to all the towels in 2018 Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the guy who made that call, who was probably the worst referee in the country, has been replaced by this lady, Wisconsin's one of the... is a Gordon Bombay team. They're going to be like, you know, take the dive, try to make sure, like, try to get play the refs. And they've got some savvy 20th year seniors who are really good at pantomiming that they're in danger when they when the pass is overthrown. And she was not buying it. There was a couple times where, like, you know, they
she's go to a the good ref.
She's a good ref. She knows what she's and. In that stadium, with all the Wisconsin fans on top of you, she's standing in the end zone, she's right over her, and you've got the six-year senior who's, like, pretending like he's getting grabbed when Turner is really just kind of, like, hand-fighting him like normal, or when one of these guys, you know, they did the thing where they grab your arm and kind of wrap it into your, against their body, so it looks like you're trying to hold them. Like, Wisconsin was pulling out all the bag of tricks, and she was not buying any of it, and I think going from that old dude that they had to this woman has dramatically improved the O'Neill crew.
Yeah, I agree. The one thing I will say, though, they can't spot the ball for Squadouche. I mean, what they're doing on the ball spots, I have no idea. They're not. Sometimes they're like 2 yards off.
And she was responsible for one bad one too near the goal line, which probably
the first down play.
Yeah,
when, you know, he was inside the three. They spotted it back at the four. So you know, which is a big deal at that spot in the field.
All right. Touchdown. That was a touchdown.
The Haskins had a touchdown, yeah.
Yeah, another sideline judge who's still awful.
Yeah, and then I had no idea what the things there. I mean, it was a clear turnover. They wanted to review that. Mm-hmm. They wanted to review Cornelius getting his foot down, I guess.
All right, let's stop talking about the officials when we don't even have any complaints.
Yeah, right? We don't, but, you know.
No, I think it's important to credit the O'Neill crew, like, had a competent game.
You talked about it on our podcast, and I was bored with it then. Let's talk about anything else.
So as far as coming out of this game, now you go to a Nebraska squad that is, again, you look at the record, you feel like, okay, this should be maybe a tough for a quarter, and then Michigan takes care of them. But Nebraska's better than that. They're better than their record. They pushed Oklahoma to the hilt. They gave the game to Michigan State, literally gave it to them. And then, of course, they come back and they blow the doors off Northwestern. So what do you make of this matchup with the Cornhuskers?
Well, Adrian Martinez is going to be the best quarterback Michigan has faced probably by some distance so far. And we haven't really seen what happens when Michigan's cornerbacks get tested a lot. So I think that will be a challenge. One thing is that they do rely on Wandale Robinson a lot, who's a slot. So that's Dax Hill territory. So I'm not too worried about that.
Wandale's gone. You're thinking of Toure.
Right. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. They replaced him with a 6'2" slot receiver out of
they wish they had Wandale
Idaho or something. Yeah. Yeah.
sorry about that. But the, I mean, Nebraska is just so weird because six times a game, they'll pull something out and you're like, that play is awesome. I love that play. And then they will shoot themselves in the face repeatedly. So clearly they're practicing something. They're just not very consistent. And so Michigan will need to take advantage of the times when Nebraska does something just mind-boggling, like covers the wrong punt returner.
Yeah, I think Brian McKenzie compared them to John L. Smith, Michigan State. One of the cool things they do is they've added a whole bunch of wrinkles to arc read or bluff, as Sam calls it, where like they'll have like an extra guy they can throw it to, or they have some RPOs off of it, and that's a really good play for them. The book on Adrian Martinez has always been the same thing. If you get him throwing off his back foot, he has no accuracy whatsoever. If he can set, he's actually pretty lethal. And teams got pretty good at just making sure that that guy never gets set. They don't have very good tackles. They just moved out all their offensive line for young ones. So they have like a top 50 redshirt freshman, and they have like a true freshman on the other side. And neither one of them can pass protect. And I think the difference with Northwestern is just terrible. So, like, Michigan can get some push, I think, but it's going to be important to get them off the field. What they did to Oklahoma is they're really good at just kind of picking away and staying out there, and they shortened the game on Oklahoma, and that's not a game that Michigan wants to get into. That was what happened against Rutgers in the second half.
So, Prochaska is the guy's name, the freshman left tackle. Now that, man, if you gonna yep. do that with Aiden Hutchinson coming to town. And then they benched Bryce Benhart. Michigan was all over Bryce Benhart back in the day. And for them to sit him down, it's like, okay, they got some issues up front over there.
So run like blockers. Those guys are all run blockers. Like Bryce Benhart is like with 6'9", 330. Like that guy's just he's a big dude, but like, you know, with Jonah Persig is the Minnesota guy that was like that too. It was just like this giant who just, you know, his feet do not move. And like if you pass rush around him, he just turns with his waist and watches you. And so they got Turner Corcoran out there, who was a top 50 player. That guy was everyone in the country was after that guy. So
and they moved to the right side, looked like, yeah, according to this game by game offensive chart that Ira sent me. I got to credit Ira. Because it's like, man, is Benhart still playing? He started the first five games, and then he got benched the last time. So,
yep,
there you go.
So yeah, and they still got Cam Juergens out there, that tiny little center who can do. God, that guy's still at sophomore eligibility. I feel like he's been playing forever. So I mean, they got a couple guys. They rotate through a lot of running backs. Ramir Johnson is like the little scat back. And then they'll bring out this walk-on, Yaquez Yant, who's listed 6'2", 245. He just looks like he was running around Northwestern. Like, the moment you're like, okay, Northwestern just does not have it this year, it was when this guy was just like bouncing outside of them.
So guys, I think we know what they are offensively. I mean, I was about to call the man Taylor Martinez. Adrian Martinez is really, you know, it all rests on him more than most teams. He's their rushing offense. Obviously, like you said, if you don't pressure him and he can, you know, be clean in the pocket, he can actually, I think they've thrown for 200 yards in every game. So he is to be dealt with. The surprise to me is they've been competent defensively. They dominated Michigan State in the second half of that game before special teams gave it back to them.
Yeah, Michigan State, I think, had 40 yards after halftime total in that game. They didn't have a first down until overtime after halftime. So this is a good defensive team. They were good against Oklahoma. Oklahoma did not do a whole lot with them either. And, you know, the rest of their schedule has been pretty tepid. But it's a good defensive team. The numbers on them are excellent, much better than Wisconsin, incidentally, combined. When you look at their offense and defense combined, this is probably a better team than Wisconsin. So not an easy game. And a lot, to me, depends on, well, how does the Michigan defense handle Martinez. I mean, we didn't deal great with Vedral in the Rutgers game, and this is the first true running quarterback that Michigan has played this year. So that's a major question for me.
Very legit.
Yeah. Very legit. And they still got Ben Steele or Ben Style. I don't know how he pronounces his name because I only ever read it. But that one defensive lineman is really where they make everything up on defense. And you know, the linebackers I think have gotten a lot better since the last time we faced them. And that's always been the rest of the problem.
What did we fix from Rutgers to stop North? Stop Nebraska. Well, they got Josh Ross a neck roll. That's one thing they fixed, right? That's going to help, I think.
They're going to be a lot more stressed on the interior than they were against Wisconsin just because of the way that Nebraska runs their offense. So there's going to be opportunities for Nebraska to double team in a way that Wisconsin really couldn't. And we've seen that kind of not go great. So I think that there is going to be, like, people are going to see this defense going up against a team that has a little jump to them, and it's going to be a little iffy for a bit, I think. But, you know, McDonald's been able to disguise really well, and one thing Martinez does do is he will throw the ball into coverage. So that's a situation where I think Michigan gets hands on some balls, and they just need to catch them.
Right. And the offense has to do its part. That's the other ingredient that we talked about that week. Man, offense left them on the field. So, you know, the opportunity to rest and recover and make adjustments are both impacted adversely by the fact that you got to go back on the field every, you know, after three plays. So that's, you know, again, that they were able to muster the stops late like they did, I think is a testament to those guys' resolve because, boy, there was just no real opportunity to get your bearings when you're offense goes four straight three and outs. So that can't happen in this game.
Well, it'll be easier if it's four and outs.
Of course, Greg.
That's my point of view.
He's not wrong. I mean, Nebraska's going to leave some guys back, and their linebackers are not Wisconsin linebackers. Like, these are some pretty small guys, and I think the tight ends are going to come back to their baseline of having some pretty good blocks, and Michigan should be able to run the ball as long as they're not like allowing them to come up and Rutgers them.
All right, so I imagine we're going to the top, Ira. So I'll take this opportunity to, while our focus is Michigan, Nebraska, that's the biggest game as far as our focus is concerned. But Iowa, Penn State is the national big game. Are you guys buyers? Are you guys
worst? Top five matchup of all time.
I'd rather watch Alabama play LSU a third time than this game.
You guys are not believers in either of these teams, obviously. You don't believe the hype that these guys are not just Big Ten, legit Big Ten contenders, but threats for as far as
nobody's good this year. Nobody's good this year except for Bama.
And Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia's defense.
Can we mention the hockey team?
Absolutely.
So I went to the exhibition against Bowling Green, and halfway through the game, I'm looking up their record, expecting that Bowling Green went like 2-34 last year. They were 20-10, and they got run off the rink. They were down 7-0. They got kind of a crappy goal kind of at the end. And the way that Michigan was playing, the kind of goals they were scoring, I mean, they were on the power play for 11 seconds. And Kent Johnson drops it. No look behind himself to Owen Power, who has a one touch fake slapper over to Brisson, who puts it top corner. Like, this is going to be a good team.
Yeah, it is going to be a good team. The one thing though, Bowling Green was 20-10 last year, but I think they lost a whole lot.
I'm sure they lost a whole lot, but this is not a, I mean, this, I mean, they
it's not in, a meatball program. I mean, and that's for sure. And
I know experience is the biggest difference between this year and last year, but I want you guys to take, you know, because you guys were watching very, very intently last year. They came out of the gate and they really blew the doors off of Arizona State last year. I know this is just exhibition, but I remember after that game, it was like, man, these guys are the Fab Five, like Mel said. And then, of course, you know, you had the adjustment as you know, you get a little deeper, you see the inexperience sort of rear up. My question to you is, in one exhibition game, could you tell the difference in this team from last year, first game against Arizona State, to this year, first exhibition versus Bowling Green?
Well, I don't think you can say that definitively. But what we can say is that this team was 15-10 last year. And the way they were 15-10 is they would win 8-1 one night and lose 3-2 the next night. Yeah. So even if they were just as good as they were last year, you figure that evens out and they're going to win 20 games. Now, you have three guys on this team who went top five in the NHL draft and were too young to be drafted the year before. So they're going to be a lot better very quickly. And I think you could see that happen. Just the precision of their passing, the familiarity with each other, because, you know, all last year, Bordalo and Brisson were on the same line. All last year, Beniers and Kent Johnson were together. And they're going to keep doing that. And I think one difference this year is you saw Dylan Duke on, I think, the Brisson line. And it was sort of a strange choice, but Philippe Lapointe was on the nominal top line with Kent and Beniers.
It's exactly like his father.
Well,
do you remember, like, when they put him on a line with Eisenman and Shanahan? He just had like a career season and then got a big yeah, bucket like, of but, money but, from like, Boston because of it.
Who are those guys? You know, those are your grinders. Those are your net front guys. Those are the guys who are gonna like dig out pucks that are just kind of lying in the crease and put it in. And you know, Dylan Duke was a top scorer on the U18s last year. And he went in the fourth round because he can't skate. But I don't need him to skate.
No, he sets up like Holmstrom and just gets in the way.
Yeah, I need him to like be good on the boards. I need him to be, you know, Brandon Kalinicki, Ryan Smith. And just having those guys, a couple of those guys on the team where you know that you're going to have some grit on all those lines, I mean, that's pretty good. And you didn't see two first-round picks against Bowling Green either. Beecher didn't play and Samoskovich didn't play. So your probable third line also has two first-round picks on it. And then the fourth line is just Garrett Van Wy and friends. Like, as long as Portillo plays pretty well, like, they're off the races.
First impressions real quick of Luke Hughes.
Not as crazy as his brother. but you see it every once in a while where you're just like, oh, he's going to jump into the play a lot, not as much as Quinn, has that skating ability. It looks like he's going to be paired with Truscott, and I think that's a really good choice because Truscott is extraordinarily boring. Just the most boring defenseman you can even imagine, and that's what you want with a Hughes. So he's going to have some license to go get it. But, I mean, the thing that jumps out to me is, like, in college hockey, you want a guy who's 24 or 25 because those guys can be really good players. And Michigan has that. They have Nick Blankenberg, who's their captain, and is going to be playing on the top line, the top pairing with Owen Power, despite the fact that they have two of their draft picks and he's not drafted. But I mean, he walked to the middle of the ice and he just roofed one and he's completely comfortable out there. He's a little undersized, sure, but that guy can play. And so not only do you have this like ton of talent, but they got Pastyov back. They got the Lake State transfer Morgan back. They have Van Wy back. So they're a great mix of high-end talent and dudes with experience now. So
and,
I think...
And Berniers is like the oldest 19-year-old I've ever seen in hockey.
So they're going to have some ups and downs, but I think they're going to be a lot less variable than they were last year, and I just think that they're likely to nuke a lot of teams. And the only thing that really gives me any pause is the Big Ten looks like it's going to be a really good league. So they're not going to just nuke people like they were in the CCHA days, but because, you know, Wisconsin's going to come to town and Minnesota's going to come to town and Notre Dame's going to come to town and all those games are going to be real games. But this looks like a team that should be challenging for big things.
I know I got the wrap-up sign, but I want to give Craig, I want to give you a chance to...
Well, just that I think Portillo's going to be fine. He didn't face a lot of super difficult opportunities against Bowling Green, but there were a couple and he looked, very comfortable. He handles the puck well. He becomes an extra defenseman. And, so I would love to have, Straussman back, but I don't think it was really a viable situation because they had to start playing Portillo too. So, I think it's going to work out in goal for Michigan, and I'm as optimistic as Brian and Seth about them.
Yeah, Fortunately, winner score. Winner, real quick. Winner score, Michigan-Nebraska. Quick, Brian.
27-15 Michigan.
Seth.
35-15 Michigan.
Greg.
30-17 Michigan.
All right.
No one can claim that we're being, you know, downers this week. So we're
all right. Michigan. All right, fellas, we appreciate you taking the time as we get out of here.